Welcome to the message podcast of Werribee Baptist Church, a vibrant church located west of Melbourne, Australia. Dedicated to creating a welcoming and safe space for everyone to explore and grow their faith in God, our vision is to see hope multiplied within our community and around the world. We hope this podcast serves as a source of encouragement and spiritual growth for you. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to journeying with you in faith.
What is the greatest challenge you've ever faced in your life? What's the greatest challenge you've ever faced in your life? You know, we live in a world that's full of challenges. As we look around the world, we see places that are devastated by war. We see places where people live in abject poverty that is cyclic in nature. We see places where people are treated as commodities and bought and sold for the pleasure and prosperity of others. As a church, we see great challenges around the world, and some of those that I just talked about, we try to make a difference in. But we also see people who are persecuted for their faith. We have people in our own church here and in our community, many in our community who have had to flee their countries, have had to leave for safety because of their faith in Jesus. Most of the things that I'm talking about right now, we acknowledge quickly as challenges. But then we just as quickly are prone to put those into the too hard basket of trying to make a difference, don't we? Because they are hard, they're massive. Anybody got the answer for world peace? Or feeding all the hungry people in the world? Or stopping the sex trade? No, those things we put quickly in the too hard basket because we don't think we can make that big a difference. Now today, we are continuing in our Seven Churches of Revelation series, and we're up to the Church of Philadelphia. We're going to look at that, but if you've missed any of the messages so far, please, please, please go back. Go to our YouTube channel, go to our website, go to all the other places you can find it. Like it, share it, listen to it over and over again. Not because I've done a great job, but because there's other people that have spoken into this series as well. And it's been a great series. We've learned a lot from the churches. But today, as we look at the church at Philadelphia, we're going to find that they had some challenges. They had some challenges that were hard. Some that we would put in that too hard basket that I was just talking about. By looking at the church at Philadelphia, we're going to learn today and hopefully be inspired to embrace some of these challenges and make a difference in our world. Are you ready to go? All right, good, good, good. So Revelation chapter 3, verse 7 says this, "Write this letter to the angel of the church in Philadelphia." As we started all the messages in this series, I need to tell you a little about the city, the place of Philadelphia. It's, again, near modern-day Turkey, and if we look at the map, you can see where it is in relation to Sardis, which we talked about last week. The city of Philadelphia is known as the city of brotherly love. It was a very tolerant city and a very eclectic city. It was actually known as a missionary center. And when I use the word missionary, I'm not talking about the missionaries that we send out from here to go and take the gospel. It was a missionary center promoting Hellenistic views, which is essentially is polytheism, taking all of the gods and worshiping them all and being tolerant of them all. In fact, there were so many temples here in Philadelphia that it was known as the Little Athens because there were so many temples there. It was also located on a fault that caused a lot of earthquakes there. There was a major trade center. And when the earthquakes would come, people were actually displaced. And a lot of people, because the earthquakes were so frequent, they would move away. They would move outside the city and try to get to safer locations. It was also on a plateau that was known for its grapes and its wine. For all of you wine connoisseurs, this was a place that you would have liked to visit, like the Yarra Valley or something. Then the church in Smyrna, it's very similar. Like the church in Smyrna, Philadelphia did not receive any condemnation at all. In each of these letters, we've seen condemnation and then commendation, right? Well, Smyrna had no condemnation, and neither did Philadelphia. Also, like the church at Smyrna, they were being persecuted by unbelieving Jews, okay? That's where Christianity started. It was started in the synagogues, and the people at Philadelphia, in the church of Philadelphia, have been kicked out. We'll talk about that more in a minute. It says this then, this is the message from the one who is holy and true, the one who has the key of David. What he opens, no one can close. What he closes, no one can open. We see Christ at the center. Once again, every church, every letter to these churches, Christ puts himself at the center. And here it says, he is the one that is holy and true. As we see the words holy and true, our mind can go to the Holy One of Israel. Jesus is claiming to be God here. He's saying, I am holy, I am set apart, I am separate from evil. True distinguished him from the false gods that were running rampant in that city, or the worship of them was running rampant in the city. But essentially, we're expressing the divinity of Christ when he says that he was holy and true. Very interesting. In chapter 6, verse 10, if we were looking at the whole book of Revelation, you would see the prayers of martyrs going up to the one who is holy and true, asking for justice. And after that, if you read the whole book of Revelation, you're going to find there's a link there, because it was that that kicked off everything else. All the things that we see in the book of Revelation started after the martyrs prayed to the one who is holy and true. The reference to the key of David here in this introduction is a reference back to Isaiah chapter 22, verse 21 and 22. And it was a messianic prophecy that symbolized control over Jerusalem. It was saying that Jesus is going to be in control over Jerusalem one day. And it says here that he holds the keys, he holds the power, and the reference would be to the eternal kingdom. Now, we know that when Jesus was on the earth, he actually gave power away. He told Peter, I'm giving you the keys to the kingdom in Matthew chapter 16, verse 19. And he said to Peter, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Now, honestly, we don't fully understand every nuance of that. But what we do know is that in Acts chapter 10, we see Peter opening the door to the kingdom to the Gentiles. Right? He did that with a guy called Cornelius, who was a Gentile, who was a devout man, and Peter, through a lot of struggle on his own, Jesus had to get his attention about this and tell him that it was okay. But Peter opened the door for the gospel to go to the Gentiles. Interestingly, Peter was still conflicted about this, because we see in Galatians chapter 2 that Paul had to confront Peter because Peter was waffling on it. And one day he would say, Gentiles are okay. The next day, if the Jews showed up, he'd say, no, we need to do all the Jewish stuff, not the Gentile stuff. So Paul said, hey, you're actually being a hypocrite here, Peter. Get that straightened out. So Peter was instrumental in the gospel going out. Then he goes on, John goes on writing the words of Jesus. I know all the things you do, and I have opened a door for you that no one can close. You have little strength, yet you obey my word and did not deny me. Look, I will force those who belong to Satan's synagogue, those liars who say they are Jews but are not, to come and bow down at your feet. They will acknowledge that you are the ones I love. What we learn here right away is that they're being faithful to God, and faithfulness to God brings opposition. If we're going to be faithful to God and following Jesus, we will face opposition. Philadelphia was the home to a synagogue community of believers, of Jews who had converted, and Jesus called the synagogue that was left there, the ones that were still meeting there following Judaism, the synagogue of Satan. The Jewish Christians had been expelled from the synagogue. And the opposition here came from the outside, but it would have felt like it was on the inside, because these would have been their friends. This would have been their neighbors. And it would have been people who were saying they were following God but had rejected Jesus. Essentially, they were trying to close the door that Jesus had opened. Jesus had opened a door to the kingdom, and these Jews that were still practicing in the synagogue tried to close that door. There was a promise here to the church at Philadelphia, and it was similar to the one at Smyrna, but it was actually a doubling down. In Smyrna, the promise was that the synagogue of Satan would not prevail against her. to Philadelphia, it said, of those in the synagogue of Satan, some are going to come and bow at your feet, and they're going to acknowledge that you're the ones that I love. Essentially, what's being said here, this is how God was opening the door for them. Some of the people that were the opposition were actually going to turn. We're actually going to be converted to following Jesus. When we talk about the open door, go back to verse 8. It says, I know all the things you do, and I have opened a door for you that no one can close. You have little strength, yet you obeyed my word and did not deny me. So in the face of opposition, they had remained faithful. They had obeyed his word and had not denied him. So not only does being faithful bring opposition, it also brings opportunity. The opposition actually brought the opportunity because they were being faithful to God. He praises this church for remaining faithful in the face of opposition. And he says, I've opened a door for you. God opens doors. While the door to the synagogue had been closed to them, God had opened the door to the kingdom. They had been faithful, and now they were getting another open door. And everybody that studied this out, all the commentators and everything, say this is an evangelistic opportunity, that open door. So what he's saying here is because you've been faithful, the reward for your faithfulness is more opportunity to serve. That's exciting, isn't it? Jesus said something similar in a parable in Matthew 25. He gives a parable of an owner, a wealthy owner, giving three servants some money to take care of while he was away. And he gave one five bags of silver and one two bags and one bag. And if you've been in church a while, you might know this story. And when the owner came back, the one that had five had doubled the money, the one that had two doubled the money, and the one that had one didn't, okay? And things didn't end well for him. But the other two, Jesus said, the owner said to them, well done, good and faithful servant. Well done. Well done. Now, as we look at that, we can see that there's a nuance to it because the next phrase, depending on your translation, it might say, you've been faithful over a few things, I will make you ruler over many. Or other translations say, I will put you in charge of many things. I personally believe through the study this week that the NLT actually says it much better. It says it like this. The master said, well done, my good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in handling this small amount. So now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together. I will give you many more responsibilities. So you might say, it's like this. He's saying, you did this easy thing well, so now I can give you something a little more challenging. And then you did that challenging thing really well, so now I can give you something that's a little bit more difficult. And you did the difficult thing well, so now I can give you something that's stinking hard to do. And you did the hard thing well, so now I can give you something that's going to feel like it's impossible. That's the nuance of what Jesus is saying here. It's not a power and position thing. You've been faithful over a few things. I'm going to elevate you. I'm going to give you some more responsibilities. You've shown yourself faithful. I'm going to give you some things that might even be harder to do because I think we can do it together, is what Jesus was saying. So it's not about climbing the religious ladder or positions or prestige. It's about faithfully serving and embracing opportunities. As I look out here, I see one of our friends that works overseas in Thailand most of the time, Jackie. Hey, Jackie. And that's her story. She grew up in this church, and guess what? She did small things first. And then she did a little more. She served in many different areas through the years, but her service kept getting, okay, you've been faithful there, Jackie. You can do the more. You can do a little more. And then she ends up in Thailand, right? That's a power trip, right? To go to Thailand. Be a missionary? No. It's because she was faithful in the small things. And friends, for those of you that might be sitting here today thinking, oh, I might be a missionary one day. Well, guess what? I hope you're faithfully serving here. I hope you're doing the small things here first because that's the pathway to there. And again, it's not a power thing. It's a service thing, embracing the opportunity. So the church in Philadelphia has an open door, an opportunity. Paul wrote a similar thing to the church in Corinth. He said to them in chapter 16, 1 Corinthians 16:9, there's a wide open door for a great work here, although many oppose me. In the church at Philadelphia, they had been obedient and had not denied the name of Jesus. So now they could be the center of proclamation of the gospel of Christ. And they would see even the opposition turn. The opposition was the opportunity. Notice what he said here about the opportunity. He said, you got an opportunity, but you have little strength. Yet you obey my word and did not deny me. So when we are faithful to God, there's going to be opposition, and that's going to bring some opportunities. But when we embrace the opportunities, guess what? It's going to come with some obstacles. Jesus said, you have little strength. You have little strength. They didn't have the strength or resources to accomplish what he was asking. That's what he was telling them. I know you don't have much strength. You know, the open doors that we see can be overwhelming, can seem overwhelming. They can seem impossible because, again, if you've been faithful over a few things, then he's going to give you even more responsibilities, and those are going to keep increasing, and it can get to the impossible state. But as we read the accounts of how God works throughout Scripture, we see that weakness, we see that obstacles are never a deterrent when God is in it. For those of you that maybe grew up in church, you've heard this story of David and Goliath probably dozens of times. The army of Israel was being taunted by the Philistine army, and this one dude, Goliath, kept coming out every day and said, send me someone to fight, and then we'll serve you or you'll serve us, depending on who wins. And David was a shepherd. He wasn't a warrior. He was a shepherd, and he came in one day to see his brothers and bring them some food, and Goliath came out there, and David said, what's up with that? What's going on with that? Why isn't anyone taking care of this dude? And you know the rest of the story. He got the stones and he put him in a sling and hit him with one stone, killed Goliath right away. But listen to what David said to the Philistine. It says, you come to me with a sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. The Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us. David said, there's weakness here. I see obstacles all around me, but guess what? I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord, and he will give you to us. Gideon was about to lead Israel in a battle against the Midianites, and he had 10,000 people ready to go, an army, and the Lord said, that's a few too many. We're going to whittle this down. And long story short, it got all the way down to 300 people. And here's why. In Judges chapter 7, verse 2, it says this. The Lord said to Gideon, you have too many warriors with you. If I let all of you fight the Midianites, the Israelites will boast to me that they saved themselves by their own strength. See, friends, the obstacles that we see, our weakness is real. We don't want to downplay that. We don't want to ignore that. It's real, but they don't limit God. For the church in Philadelphia, it was because of their little strength that he was able to work through them. Jesus told the Apostle Paul that my strength is made perfect in weakness. In their limited strength in Philadelphia, they rested on God's power. They had obeyed him and not taken the easy way out. And now God's opening a door. And when God opens a door, we have to walk through it, not focused on our weakness, but reliant on his strength. Because when it's of God, it's not going to be stopped. So we've got opposition. We've got opportunity. We see obstacles. But look here at the promise that Jesus makes. It says, because you have obeyed my command to persevere, I will protect you from the great time of testing that will come upon the whole world to test those who belong to this world. All right. For the smart people, okay, I'm going to give you about 3 minutes here for the really, really smart people that want to take it to another level, okay? Are you with me? The rest of you, don't check out. Come back in just a minute. What does it mean when he says, I will protect you from the great time of testing to come upon the whole world? There are a lot of different opinions about this, but what is meant, the passage is a key one that's used by those who believe in a pre-tribulation rapture of the believers, okay? So that's what we're focusing in on here. The church is going to be spared from the 7 years of tribulation described in the book of Revelation after this. If you've been doing the quiet time, you've read all about that. There's three common views about what this looks like. And I want to share those with you very quickly here. There's the pre-tribulation view, the mid-tribulation view, and the post-tribulation view. The pre-tribulation view says that believers are going to be raptured out before the tribulation period begins, okay, before things start getting really, really ugly on the earth, all right? The mid-tribulation view says, it's also called the pre-wrath rapture, is that at the end of 3.5 years, the Antichrist is going to rise up for that first 3.5 years, and then he's going to start doing some really nasty things. And at that point, when he starts doing the really nasty things, the judgment of God is going to fall hard, okay? And the mid-trib view says the church, the believers, are going to be raptured out before the wrath begins. Then the post-tribulation views says believers are going to go through all that and suffer through that just like everybody else, but they will be protected and preserved. So, which view is right? There's lots of scholars, and there are people that have actually preached in this series that actually don't think the same thing about this. Okay, that's why it's fun, and that's why I said this is for smart people. It's kind of just a little extra for you today. But when we look at it, I think we need to go back and look at the Greek word. I'm just going to tell you where I'm landing. You can figure it out yourself where you want to be. Literally, the Greek translates those words, I will keep you out of the hour of trial. There's a Greek word there called ek that clearly carries the idea of out of or from that hour of trial. The post-tribulation view says that Jesus will preserve his people through that trial. If that was what Jesus intended, I think he would have used another very common Greek word that would have been appropriate here, and that's the word in. He used the word ek, not in. In means through. Secondly, Jesus also calls this a specific time period. Some people believe that this is just figurative, and it means that he's going to keep his people out of trouble through all times. That doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense because he's pointing to a specific time, a specific hour, he says, when the trouble is actually global. And then finally, there's a phrase at the end of that verse where it says, to test those who belong to this world. Those on the earth at this time are opposing God, and this judgment is for them who belong to the world. That same phrase is used 11 times in the book of Revelation. Each time it's talking about wicked people. So it would seem that there would be no context for the church to be there during this time. Can you see where I'm landing, right? I actually think this view is right, but you know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to die for that view because there's a lot of smart people that disagree with me, and there's a lot of theologians that can make different cases. But you know what the beautiful thing is? All of the views says that Jesus is going to protect his people. Whether we go through the tribulation or whether we're out before the tribulation, Jesus is going to protect us. That's the bottom line. In the end, his children will not suffer the wrath to come. Look at verse 11 then. It says, I am coming soon. That's Jesus. Hold on to what you have so that no one will take away your crown. All who are victorious will become pillars in the temple of my God, and they will never have to leave it. And I will write on them the name of my God, and they will be citizens in the city of my God, the new Jerusalem that comes down from heaven from my God. Finally, friends, today, we've seen the opposition, we see opportunity, we see obstacles. Faithfulness to God makes us overcomers. That's what he's saying here in verse 11 and 12. Faithfulness to God makes us overcomers. Jesus says, I'm coming soon, and that could be really controversial. What does he mean by soon? And here's the bottom line. It's one day sooner than when this was written, okay? So it's still soon. It's coming. He's on his way. He says to persevere, hold on. Don't walk away from your faith. No one can take it away from you. These people have been rejected. They've been persecuted, but no one can take away their faith. Their identity was God's children. A theologian called Scott Duvall says this: never again would they need to leave their place of worship or their place of residence. Remember, they left for the earthquakes and all that. They'd been kicked out of the synagogue. Never would they need to leave either of those, live outside the city. They are promised permanent citizenship in God's kingdom. I think that's pretty exciting. That would have been a great encouragement to the believers at Philadelphia. No matter how small or how weak it felt for them, their perseverance and faithfulness would be rewarded. You know, friends, we see things that overwhelm us, and when we see weakness, we see obstacles, God sees us as overcomers. Finally, he says the same thing he said to all the churches: anyone with ears to hear must listen to what the Spirit is saying to the churches. And we need to listen to what the Spirit is saying to the churches today. Question: what are the open doors that God is placing in front of you? What doors is God opening for you? What has he put in your heart? What has he made you passionate about to make a difference in this world? Friends, it's that nagging thing that just won't go away. I listed a bunch of issues when we first started the sermon today. So one of those? It doesn't have to be world peace. It doesn't have to be stamping out hunger. It might be helping out in the kids' ministry. It might be helping out on Thursday nights when we're trying to feed people here in our community. Christ himself opens doors. It's his job to open the doors, not ours. But when God opens a door, nobody can shut it. When he closes it, no one can open it back up. But the open door, it may not be like it's wide open. It could be that the door's cracked open. And then you need to take that step through that door that's open. Do you understand what I'm saying? He's not going to show you the end of where that door leads, but the door's open. And you take the step right through that door. Our job is to go through the doors that he opens, one step at a time, one foot in front of the other, going where he leads us. So while we consider what doors God is placing in front of you, focus on the opportunity, not the obstacle. Don't look at your weaknesses and say, oh, I can't do it because. It's what Moses did at the burning bush. Oh, I can't speak well. I can't do this. I can't do that. And God said, yeah, you can, because I am with you. God's commandments are God's enablement, Warren Wiersbe says. The fact that you see your own limitations, you see your own inabilities to do it in your own strength, guess what? I would suggest to you that's what makes it a God opportunity. Because you say, I can't do this myself. I know I can't. If you can do it yourself, maybe it's just something that you've thought up. If it's just beyond what you can do, good chance that might be coming from God. In God's power, he's not limited by our obstacles, and he can make us overcomers. And then, as we're going through the doors, the opportunities, and we don't focus on the obstacles, we need to leave the outcomes to him, because he's responsible for that. Nobody can close doors he opens. Fear, unbelief, delayed response can cause us as individuals and the church to miss many, many opportunities. As a church, what does this mean for us? As a church, if you were here on Monday night, you know that there is potentially a door God is opening for us. There's another church that's asking for help. Say, hey, could Werribee Baptist actually parent us? Could we become a campus of Werribee Baptist? And we're in that discussion because we didn't go looking for that opportunity. And friends, if we sit down and make a list, I can see a whole lot of obstacles. But what I don't have and what I don't see and what the leadership team hasn't had is peace right here that says we can say no to this opportunity. So what do? Well, we walk through the door and we keep taking one step at a time and see where that leads. Does that mean the door's going to stay open? God can close that door. But we're going to take one step at a time and see where that leads us. Friends, as I read this passage this week and got ready to speak to you about this, I just couldn't get my mind out of this. And actually, I am actually taking it as from God. One more affirmation that this is an open door that he is providing for us. So I'm going to be inviting everyone to join in that in some way, shape, or form, even if it's praying and supporting of what's going on over there. But friends, that's what we as a church are going to be doing, what it looks like we're going to be doing. But what do you need to do today? Again, maybe it's not a church in another location. Maybe it's not stamping out hunger. Maybe it's not giving world peace. But what open door has God put in front of you that you need to take a step into today? Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for our time together today. And Lord, thank you for songs that were written by people who went through challenges that we cannot even fathom. Thank you for the church in Philadelphia who you could show us was faithful. And they didn't have all the strength that they needed, but they had enough faith to go through the doors that you opened. Help us, Lord, to be faithful and to go through the open doors that you are giving us today, collectively, corporately, but also individually. Lord, each and every one of us has opportunities that you place in front of us. Help us to recognize those and help us lean into them by your strength and your power. In Jesus' name, amen.